Welcome to Making Geeks, the best podcast on the internet for dads, geeks, and makers. Today with us, we have Josh Price.
Hey, everybody.
Mr. Mark O'Keefe.
Hey, guys. What's up?
And Mr. Wes Swain.
Hello.
And me, I'm Sean Joliker. So, how's everybody doing today?
Doing great.
Excellent.
Pretty good.
Everybody having fun catching imaginary digital creatures?
I caught the little orange one with his butt on fire.
I don't know what I'm having more fun with, like playing the game or seeing all the memes about how I'm too old to play the game.
I've walked more in the last 3 days than I've walked in the last 3 months.
Nice.
That's good.
If I had a Fitbit, I'm sure I'd be hitting my goals every day right now. Looking for things that don't exist. So
they could totally
power up.
Good.
Like based on like steps, has that been integrated into the game?
No, you got to power them up yourself.
Okay, so it doesn't take any kind of data like that and factor that into the game in any way?
No, it does. It's you can hatch eggs by walking.
Yeah, it tracks through GPS, and if you're going too fast, it recognizes or supposedly understands that you're in a car.
Yeah,
so you have to be walking slow enough to hatch. So I've hatched like 4 eggs so far.
I haven't. I've had it active in my work truck. Like I'll keep it off to the side while I'm going from job to job, and I've barely walked anywhere.
Well, you guys drive really, really slow.
Yeah.
How do you get an egg? I see the little thing where you could keep an egg. How do you get an egg? Forgive me. I don't know what I'm doing. I downloaded it like 4 hours ago, and I got to try to get Deacon to like have this mythical samurai fight with this Pokemon that was in my living room. It was pretty funny.
When you go to the different Pokestops, some of them will actually give you items, and sometimes they'll give you an egg. And that's how you usually get them.
Okay.
Unless you're one of the millions of people that are actually paying for the items in the store.
Nope.
No.
So if you all haven't guessed already, we're going to talk about video games. It's not going to be a Pokemon episode.
No. That's just kind of a springboard for the conversation.
It's the elephant in the room.
A Pokestop.
Because it's so popular at the moment. It's what the young people are playing.
I don't even think popular is a word. Like, it's the highest, the most downloaded game. It's been out for like a week.
It beat out Google's, you know how Google measures the searches for everything? It beat out porn. Like, all of it.
Yes.
Dude, leave it to Nintendo. Kind of you never want to count Nintendo out.
Like the game or not, but beating porn, that's pretty significant, I feel.
It's borderline miracle.
Yeah. You've got there's so many comments, but we're a family show, so I'm going to not make them.
I'm trying to be a family show. We try to get all that up before we start recording. So.
And for all you kids out there, porn is a type of cartoon that we used to watch back in the 80s. It was a special show, so don't ask your parents what it is. That's all it is. It's just a show that was no fun, and we don't need to talk about it anymore.
And it gets really weird when you go to Japan.
We went there. All right. And we're transitioning.
So, I think it's cool that we're, they're finally, like, this kind of breaks the mold for showing companies that, hey, augmented reality is a big, huge thing. And we can make some real... I think within the next 5 years, we're going to see some really cool games coming out because of how popular this was.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, we're going to see some amazingly horrible games come out, and that's going to be fun, too.
Well, look what Nintendo did with the Wii. I mean, that started the whole motion control bandwagon that every company jumped upon, for better or for worse. And they're doing the same thing.
They're the first ones to take the risk.
Yeah. They're always... In my book, they're always the ones to try the crazier things than everybody else, with the exception of the internet. They were behind on that. Any sort of internet-based gaming or anything like that, they were a couple strokes behind, but everything else.
I think it's kind of a good thing they were behind on some of the internet stuff, though, especially Nintendo, when they kind of passed themselves off of being more of a family company. Until they had a real good way of trying to keep things maybe safe
right.
or family-friendly. I don't fault them for that as much. I think it's more along the lines of Nintendo comes out with this cool technology and then throws it to all the developers and said, okay, now you figure out how to be creative with it.
Right.
And it never really happened. So, but it looks like they have a winner here.
Yeah, I'm really excited about what is going to come after this. Because, I mean, all those memes about, like, you're too old to play Pokemon. I mean, yep. But if you were to replace Pokemon with an original idea or an original game, it would be an awesome original game. Like, if you liked geocaching or knew anything about geocaching, like, this takes it to the next level. You're integrating a video game with, like, live-action treasure hunting. Like, you're... And I was talking to somebody about the game, and I was like, okay, no, wait, is this reality or is this in the game? Like, I had to differentiate what I would actually be looking at and what would be part of the video game. And I've never had to have that conversation before. Like, if we're talking about a video game, it's a mimic of what a bunch of programmers think real life looks like. This game has elements that it blends those two seamlessly. Like, there was a monster in my living room, and I could move my phone around, and he was standing on the floor in front of me. Like, it was insane.
Yep.
Like you're talking about, this is groundbreaking. Even in the description, like, and again, if you didn't like Pokemon or if you were too old to kind of be on that bandwagon, replace it with whatever you want to replace it with, and it would be just as cool. So get over the fact that you think Pokemon is dumb and appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah. I would love to see them make, like, a Zelda adventure game using this.
That'd be cool.
That I would, like, just to see, like, 8-bit mock-ups or like Super Nintendo versions of stuff running around in my living room, like the Octa, I forget what they were called.
The
octopus that shoot rocks out of their noses.
Octorok or something, I believe.
Yeah. Take an octopus and Q-Bert, mush them together, throw that into the real world, and I think that would be really cool. You know, you're gonna see all sorts of people jumping on this bandwagon now since, you know, they're making $1 billion a day.
You know, go ahead.
The area that I lived in, I lived here for 8 years. And there's a park by my house that I've been to, you know, 10, 15 times. And usually when I go with my kids and we're just by the playground. Well, now we've walked around the park because now we're looking for things within the game. And walking around the park, I didn't know they had a rose garden there. I found all these statues that were there I'd never seen. They have an old cannon. Stuff that I never would have seen if this game didn't lead me to these different locations and exploring my area and seeing things I never would have seen before. And I think that's really kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't think we explore that much anymore. I get in my car and I go from one place to another. I don't see most of my actual area. So I think it has an additional benefit that way.
I heard there were a lot of, like, local businesses that got spiked because they became Pokeshops. And so they got a lot of foot traffic they would normally not be able to get, which is amazing. I mean, you can I don't know how Pokeshops are designated, but, I mean, you could put one in a Walmart or you could put one in a shop downtown. And that shop downtown is now going to get some business, and that's pretty amazing.
From what I read, most of those things are taken from the previous game that Niantic made called Ingress. Because that's what a lot of people mapped out every area playing that game, so they migrated a lot of those. Yeah,
it's supposed to be
spots
objects of cultural importance, like churches or art pieces or anything beyond anything except a school. That was one of the limitations. It couldn't be like an elementary school, so you wouldn't have creepers walking around with cell phones. Mm-hmm. But everything else, like churches and water towers, any sort of landmark or cultural important thing. They basically crowdsourced all that data from the previous game and used a lot of it in this one, which is genius.
If the work's already done, why redo it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that should take us to like a related topic within video games. Are there any other games that you played or experienced growing up that had any sort of like impact on you? Like this one is going to possibly impact our kids at this point.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Role-playing games.
See, but I think that, yeah. I mean... I don't know how old each one of you are, but I'm roundabouting that we're all in the same age bracket. That, I mean, we were on the cusp of, we're on the cusp of cool games. So I think just the NES, I mean, I'm sure that we all have that one special game that we really like to play, but like the NES came out in our generation, so games were so much more, you know, accessible. Just the fact that you could play that thing was amazing and was groundbreaking and changed all our life.
I mean, if you compare what we've seen in our lives, we're going from, you know, like, I had Atari when I was a little kid, so we're, I mean, let's just include that too. We're going from Pong and Frogger to little things running around in our living rooms. You know, that's a really cool thing to have been able to witness over the years, you know, the evolution of getting to that point. And to imagine what our kids are going to see. They're starting out with the augmented reality, the things running around right. in the living rooms. What's the next thing going to be?
As a norm, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think back to your question, I mean, this game can be impactful for your kids just because it's cool and it's technologically awesome, which I don't think young kids are going to appreciate, because that's just what they're going to have. That's going to be their normal.
It's right. going to right. help teach them the metric system.
Well, yeah. But I think it's that time that they're spending with you. Like, because video games before this were very singular, unless you played online with a bunch of faceless people that can talk a bunch of trash. But, I mean, when I got it, I went and grabbed Deacon. I'm like, let's go outside real quick. And there's nothing around me, so we would have had to travel quite a long ways, because I don't live as densely populated as everybody else. But
you still get the monsters, though.
Huh?
You still get the monsters, though.
Do they randomly appear?
Yeah,
they do.
Okay. Learn something new every day. But I think that's what they're going to take away. Because, I mean, you mentioned a game from our childhood. So I played the original Legend of Zelda with my mom. Yep. And it was because I played with my mom and she was into it. She really liked it. And we eventually beat the game. And that's what I remember, is that she and I played that game together. And I think that's what a lot of really young kids, if they do play with their parents, you know, I think that's the big takeaway. Or how they're going to play with their new group of friends. Or how this has, you know, brought together Team Valor or whatever into some kind of community.
Right.
And my memory of playing games when I was a little kid was X-Men on the Sega Genesis with my sister.
Ooh. On the Game Gear?
No. The regular Genesis. Always fought over who was who. She was always Jean Grey or Storm, because I think those were the only girls there. I think I was Nightcrawler most of the time.
I wasn't even really allowed to play video games until I was almost a teenager. Hmm. My brothers are quite a bit younger than I am. They're 10 and 13 years 10 and 13 years younger than me. And before they were old enough to play video games, my parents basically didn't let me play. They didn't think there was a lot of value in it, so they just didn't let me. So it wasn't until my brothers were old enough that I started playing with them. So I got into it a little bit later, but I've always been drawn to it. It's been a huge part of my life and was almost my career of choice before I chose to teach instead. Video games are really deep rooted into, you know, what I grew up with and what I actually even like now as an adult, and that I'm kind of like sharing now with my kids a little bit too. So it's kind of hard to get away from.
Yeah, same for me. My probably one of my top games, most impactful, and once I say it, it won't be much of a surprise, is Mario Paint for the Super Nintendo. That game I spent more time in than probably any other, just for the fact that I could like animate, you know, and all my creations would like come to life. And I went so far as to hooking a VCR up to my console so I could record my animations, because you could only do like a certain amount per, you know, they only had so much RAM that could store, you know, animations. And so I would like make this cool animation and then like hit record on the VCR, record it, and then it would allow me to erase it and do another one. I did like a whole Simba, like the stampede scene in Lion King. I drew Simba like on a branch, and he's like dangling from the branch like over the wildebeest that are, you know, stampeding beneath him. And it was only four frames of animation of him like you know, hanging from that big branch over it. And I was like so proud of that. It was pretty cool. And I even like, I don't know, it was all about it. It was definitely my favorite. And obviously that had like a huge impact on my interest in art, which was pretty heavy before that, but it kind of tied it in more directly to video games, which I loved previously. So then I realized, oh, there's actually, you know, a connection here. Maybe I can do this for a living. So that set me on a path similar to what Sean was describing with computer animation and video game.
Really, that's kind of the same thing that that Minecraft is doing for kids. I mean, I don't like that game just because it just doesn't look like anything for me. But the learning value apparently is it's teaching kids like structure and architecture and coding and the whole nine yards. Apparently, I'm too old to, I guess, understand how, because I don't have kids that can play it, so I'm not really paying attention to it. But I mean, that's if you get really clever, you can teach kids anything with video games.
I'm curious because my son is 6, and so I was thinking if I was going to introduce video games at a time, it might be like on the cusp of his age bracket. So his cousin plays Minecraft, and so he goes over there and they spend the night or whatever, and Deacon knows about it. He's like, well, this guy's name is Steve and there's cave spiders and whatever, but he's never actually like sat down and played it himself. So for his birthday, I downloaded it on the iPad, and his cousin was here and he tried to play it, and I was like, all right, I want you to build me a tree house. And then I came back and he had put the iPad away like a day or so later, and he just wasn't playing it anymore. I'm like, are you done? He was like, oh, I'm stuck. Like, real nonchalant. I'm like, what do you mean you're stuck? Like, I don't know much about the game. And apparently he just, like, was hitting the screen so much where he just dug himself into the earth and just kept doing that until he got into this crazy maze and could not figure out where he was. And so he just throws these fireballs that are in the game and, like, to illuminate. And he's seriously in this, like, twisted quagmire of holes underground and couldn't get out. So he got bored with it. So I had to start the game over.
Don't think to China, man. You get lost.
But with, I mean, I don't know, with Pokemon Go, but we talked about value for kids. I don't know how to integrate video games. Because, Sean, you talk about not being old enough or your parents didn't want you to play them. And I get that. And I get, as a parent, like, I can see that point of view.
Yeah.
But then when I was younger, there was a family friend that had a daughter who was the same age as my younger sister. And she never played video games. Her parents would not let them play it. They had no value in their mind. And she came to us one day, was like, we need to borrow your Nintendo, like our original NES. So my mom gave it to him. I'm like, what in the world are you doing? Why? Why are you giving it to them, of all people? And I guess the doctor said there was something with her eyes, like her eyes couldn't track very well. And so the doctor's remedy was to get this girl a video game console so that her eyes could be able to track on all different, you know, axes and have a better range of motion, having to, you know, focus on such, you know, crazy rapid movements. What you would think as a parent back in the day, sitting too close to your TV, watching all those things, you're going to get seizures, and you're going to go blind, like, and that was actually a prescription from a doctor. And so I don't know if that was that one girl's case or if it's something that all kids need to exercise those ocular muscles by playing video games. Like,
just don't play video games in the dark or you end up with glasses. Because that's exactly what I did.
Josh, what you're describing, a good friend of mine, had that basically the same prescription from a doctor, is to play video games. He said that he had astigmatism, and playing video games actually helped with, I think, the same thing that you're describing. So, not that video games are a cure for anything, but it's definitely something you use to help aid in something with vision for certain people. Not for everybody, but, you know, in certain cases.
So, yeah.
I think that's probably one of the few cases where it's seen as a real physical benefit, though.
At the time, I did not find those benefits. I just got gypped out of my NES. I was not happy.
I don't want to help anyone see better. I want to play Zelda.
So, but, like, are there games now, I guess, Sean and Wes, I mean, Wes, your daughter's about the same age.
Yeah.
Like, what games have you introduced to them?
I tried with Samantha when she was, like, 4.5, just to see if she was interested. And I put her in front of the original NES with Super Mario Brothers. And she couldn't really grasp the concept that easily of, you know, left and right and jump and, you know, correlating local motion with something virtual on a screen. And she got pretty easily frustrated and kind of gave up pretty quickly. But in the last couple weeks, I tried again on Super Mario Brothers 2, which was my favorite of the original trilogy.
The trippiest Mario game.
And it's arguably easier for a kid to pick up because there's no time limit in each level. So they can sit there and stand around and figure out the game without being penalized. And I was coaching her, like, oh, you know, jump on this guy. You walk up to this plant and hit the button. Oh, I can. Whoa, she's like, whoa, I just picked up a vegetable. She's like, what? You know, like, what happens if you throw it at this guy? And she's like, I'm kind of coaching her, like, how to explore within this virtual thing. And she started picking it up. And then she got interest to go back to play the original Mario Brothers. And she kept trying over and over and over and over again to beat the first level, to get to the castle at the end of the flagpole, because she saw me do it. sailing through the game, right? And then every time it's her turn, she gets like 10 seconds of trying and she falls in a pit. And then it's me again for a few minutes. You know, it's just... But she got like a... She hadn't exhibited this level of determination with the game on my previous attempt. And now she was trying and trying. She actually got past the first level, like right before her... You know, this is your last chance before bedtime a couple days ago. And she tried it and she got it. Oh, she was so excited. I wish I had it on video. It was amazing. And I think like one of the takeaways, at least in my experience growing up and just recently with her, is it helped her like focus on one goal and like help instill like a little determination and perseverance, which is a great quality to have, you know.
See, I get that in that game, having a goal, because Minecraft right now, like, you can do anything in that game. And so I think Deke doesn't have a focus in that game, because he was showing me and he's like, "Dad, look, there's creepers." And so he goes up and like he whacks him with this axe. He's like, "Oh, you can kill them." I'm like, "Well, why are you killing them?" He's like, "Well, because they're bad." I'm like, "Why? What do they do? Do they like try to hurt you, like the angry mushrooms or the things with the shells in Mario?" I'm like, do they break your stuff?" He's like, "No." I was like, "Well, why are you trying to kill them? Are you going around breaking things and digging yourself holes to China, apparently?" I'm like, "Because you don't have kind of a task." And so I get that, and that's...
Yeah.
That's a real good benefit.
And she also particularly enjoys the bonus game in between the levels in Super Mario Brothers 2. If you remember, you collect coins throughout the game, throughout the level, and then there's like a basically a slot machine at the in between. And it's real simple, and she's enjoy playing that as well. Maybe that's tapping into the gambling side of her that I don't want to help. But she quite loved it, so I'm probably gonna keep doing that, you know, a couple times, you know, not a month, but you know, just every once in a while when she does well for the day, like behavioral and stuff, we'll try it. We have this thing at night called Samantha time. So after Grant's gone to bed, she gets, you know, based on what time it is when all this occurs, she gets at least like half an hour of time with us, you know, or an hour just her and I, or her and her mom, or just us three without Grant running around interrupting or something. So that was her choice that one night, is to try again. So that was pretty cool.
Cool. Sean, what about you?
My kids are inherently spoiled because I have a lot of stuff. You know, I have several game systems, and I do mainly PC gaming, but I have like 200, you know, different PC games. So my son started watching me play games from earlier, pretty early on, but he wasn't allowed to play. So this has become kind of a regular thing for him, and seeing it and understanding the way some things work. The first game I ever let him play, though, and this is the only game that I let him play for probably about a year, was Mario Kart on the Nintendo DS. And it helped with hand-eye coordination, of getting to learn how to move the controller and the different buttons. And I think it kind of related, Josh, to what you're saying, too, about needing a goal. It's a really simple concept. It's a race. You need to try to get in first, and that's it. And then after about that year is when he actually started playing Minecraft. And it was at that time, too, that he started getting into Legos. So he made this natural connection between those two things. You know, I can make and craft anything in Minecraft, and I can also go and do that with Legos. So it kind of went hand in hand for him. And there's two different modes in Minecraft. There is the adventure mode, where you have to, you know, survive the night and beat the creepers and all the bad things out there. And then you have crafting mode, which is just basically an open sandbox where you build and make anything you want. So there's two different ways.
So creepers are bad. In some version of creepers are bad.
Yeah, they're bad, and it only matters if you're playing the adventure mode. If you're doing the creative mode, nothing can hurt you. You can't really die. It's
okay.
You know,
because I thought that he was just like murdering these fellows that are just out for a walk. And I'm like,
no,
they have a family, and you didn't get the backstory.
Yeah, I'm like, you don't know what that guy is doing. He's just hanging out, enjoying the lake.
It's just NPC through Minecraft, yeah.
Well, it's just as bad as the original Mario Brothers. A lot of people don't realize this, that the in the lore of the original Mario Brothers, the bricks are the people of the Mushroom Kingdom that Bowser turned and cast a spell upon and turned them into bricks. Think about that for a second.
Mario was just shattering all of them.
Yes. Yep.
It's in the instruction book for the original.
Really?
I'll post a screenshot in the show notes, and it says that Koopa cast a spell on the Mushroom Kingdom, turn all their people into bricks. So that's pretty dark when you think about it.
Wes is one of the few people that reads the instruction book.
Not at the time. This is a discovery I made later on that kind of blew my mind. Also, fun fact, if you looked in the instructions for DuckTales, or sorry, excuse me, not DuckTales, Duck Hunt, it's actually a two-player game. A lot of people don't know that. The second controller controls where the ducks fly. And the,
God, I forgot about that. That's right.
I forgot about that, too.
Yeah,
yeah, we thought that was
fun fact. Like a glitch or something.
Yeah, we thought that was like a lie.
Yeah.
Until we figured it out, and then it just became like, I'm going to screw around with my brother. So he can't make. I still don't know. Like,
actually,
with all the technological understanding I have now as an adult, I still don't know how that gun works on a TV. I don't know how it aims. I don't know how it understands where I'm pointing at my TV. Like, you talked about Nintendo specifically being very cutting edge and forward thinking in their technology, and even then, I still don't get it.
Doesn't work. No, it doesn't work anymore. Like, it doesn't work with modern TVs. It's only a tube TV. Yep. It deals with how the refresh rate, and the modern ones don't have a refresh rate. They display the entire screen at once.
Actually, the funny, I completely forgot about this up until now. You guys remember that game Gyromite?
Yeah.
That came with, you were supposed to play it with Rob the Robot, which is what Nintendo originally came with. Well, what me and my friends and my sister, we found a new way to play that game. Instead of getting the robot to open up all the doors for you, we would play, one person was the doors, one person was the guy, and you had to get through without dying because the person who pushed the doors was trying to kill you with the doors. So what else?
So what video games, so progress past your childhood, and which ones meant things to you as a childhood. What video game was your, like, guilty pleasure? That one that had no real impact, that one you just like to play because you were a dumb boy and you either like to blow stuff up or look at pixelated ladies or
whatever. Yeah, that was Grand Theft Auto is the guilty pleasure. let's steal stuff, blow stuff up, and run over hookers. There's no learning.
When did you first play Grand Theft Auto?
I think it was...
Like, how old were you?
Grand Theft Auto 3.
Wow. It's pretty late.
Was my first one. Yeah, I knew of the first two. Or was it two?
I think there was two before.
There were two, yeah. The first two were top down. The first two were top down.
Okay, so yeah, it was definitely three then.
Yeah, I think mine was three.
Yeah, played.
I mean, in a way, Grand Theft Auto 3 shouldn't even be a three, because it was the first of that type.
Yeah.
Game.
So 2000. So I was 21.
Yeah, I was going into college, I think, when I played, but that was really late. Or I don't know if it was early. My roommate had a PlayStation, and I didn't have a PlayStation. I got all my gaming systems like when they became on sale with like the two or three games for free.
Yeah.
And
he
had a PlayStation. He had that game, and yeah, we'd sit up at night playing Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, I played the first Grand Theft Auto in the Navy. Actually, they installed them on the shop computers. The first one.
Nice.
Yeah, so they're like, when the Chiefs aren't in there, like, oh, let's play some Grand Theft Auto, run over the cops, you know, get bonus points and everything. it was so, you know, it's such a controversial game, even within the circle, you know, the gaming sphere wasn't as wide back then, and it was just like, what, you get to run over cops, what, how can they get away with this, you know? It's just sort of same conversation, just on a different scale now for a lot of these controversial games. But yeah, I was in the Navy in Norfolk, Virginia.
Now, what's your go-to games? Like, what are the games you enjoy playing the most? I mean, even though, because I know for me, I don't get to play a lot anymore. Mm-hmm. But there was, what are the games that you'd still just sit down and waste hours if you didn't have to be an adult?
Hmm. Well, there's one.
Mine, sorry. We keep doing
we
that.
We have a lot to say about it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we do. Mine would be Civilization, if anybody's heard of that
game. I've never played it, but I know it's very popular. I know that.
So for anybody listening that isn't familiar with this game, it is a turn-based game that is a lot like a board game, almost like a digital version of Risk, except that you progress through time. You basically start in like tribal times. Your civilization advances, discovers knowledge. You get new units or soldiers and troops, and you basically acquire land and build cities. I started playing that game in, I think, my sophomore year of high school. And it wouldn't be uncommon on a regular school night for me not to go to bed till 1 or 2 in the morning because I was playing that game and, you know, just wanting one more turn. And they have Civilization V out now, which is, you know, 20-some years later, and I'm still playing it that same way. And it's a great game. Actually, you know what? I passed some history tests because of that game.
Really?
Because, well, when you build cities, you have all these different civilizations that you can play as, and the cities that you build are of a lot of the same historic cities. Right. So I was able to identify, you know, what city went with you know, what culture, what civilization. Right.
Babylon or Macedonia and all that stuff.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Huh.
So it's a fun game, educational game, and actually really a lot of strategy. So if there was a game that was even going to be the most educational, I'd probably almost give it to a game like that. And I'll have my son play that one day. He's watched me play before already, so.
Now, is that different from, like, SimCity, where you're trying to build, like, a civilization, or is it like a war-based civilization where you take over stuff, or is it just to progress the civilization?
Well, you could take over by diplomacy. Well, actually, now it's more of an advanced game, but you could take over by diplomacy, culture, or by force. So it's pretty complex in the workings of it now compared to how it started out. When it first started out, it was really like a lot like Risk, just basically whoever has the most soldiers and the most powerful win. But it's a lot more complex than that now.
But you can't flip the table when your friends cheat.
pull the plug.
You can pull the plug. Yeah. You can rage quit.
Yeah, I'd say one of my guilty pleasures would be StarCraft, either one. I picked that up while I was in the Navy, and I have a good friend who lives in Wyoming, Travis, that we lived in separate buildings. We lived in separate buildings while we were in the Navy. We were in shore duty, and in the original StarCraft, you could actually, it was a PC game for those who don't know, you could hook up your phone line to your computer, and it had a capability of dialing a phone number through the game to make a direct connection to the other person's computer. You didn't have to have an internet service. Hmm. As long as the other game was, like, set up to receive, you know, on that state or whatever.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we would, like, dial each other's room. And Sean's holding up StarCraft 2 box expansion.
The battle chest.
But, yeah, we would play that up and we had to work early, you know, for days. Like 4:30 in the morning we had to be at work. But but we just would play that way more than we should have. And even now, like, we won't talk for a few weeks or months, just different spurts, you know, how life gets in the way with modern friends, even though we can be connected at any given point. Sometimes there's those lulls in communication with good pals. But we'll get in these modes where we'll just, like, hey, let's play some StarCraft, okay, and we'll be on there, like, every couple nights and just play like we used to, you know. Even though it hurts us a lot more when we wake up in the morning. You're like, oh my gosh, I got hit by a digital truck with a Zergling on the front. But yeah, that's my and it's a strategy game as well. So you build up little armies and you upgrade the armies, and you could team up with a person or play against another human or team up against the computer, which we typically like to do the most. But you can just look at your watch and, like, half a day has gone by easily.
Yeah.
I'd say my go-to game along those same lines of how you connect with other people,
mm-hmm.
was Call of Duty Modern Warfare. It came out, like, when I deployed to Iraq, and it was the first game that I had ever played. Like, all the other Call of Duties were set in, like, World War II and things, and it was the first game that kind of spoke to, like, the culture that I was in at the time. Like, had all the same weapons, had all the same gear. It was set in the same environment that I was in. And
see, I don't know if I could play that in that instance.
See, and that's the thing, is people would think that it would be this very traumatic, PTSD-inducing kind of thing, but it was, like, honestly the exact opposite.
Yeah.
It was so therapeutic, and you would get kind of lost in it. And I was a helicopter crew member, and so we would come back from these missions and immediately go into playing this game. And we had a big projector, and so we'd have, like, the four-person split screen. And we would just go to town in this deserty environment, look like a place we had just done a mission. And when people, like, I don't know, random people would come in to see how everybody was doing, commanders or chaplains or whatever, like, that's how you got to us, is you would sit down and you'd play Call of Duty with us, and then we would kill you, like, mercilessly. Like, it would be a bloodbath. And then we'd get out and go do missions again, and people would try to talk to us about the things that we saw. We're like, shut up and just play Call of Duty. Like, don't worry about it. And so you could play like the Allied forces, or you could play, you know, the terrorists, you know, different teams or whatever. And so they would use, like, I don't want to say whatever it was because I would butcher the language, but there was just this Arabic words that this guy would shout in his games. And we never really cared, but at the time we didn't know what he was saying. And we worked with this group that had like embedded Iraqi forces that we were training them to be like commandos. And so we're playing this game, and we're like, what's that dude saying? And out of nowhere, like, the interpreter walks by. He's like, the guy is saying, run to the target.
Like, wow. That makes sense.
And it was funny. And again, probably not, like, politically correct, but we would get, like, these Iraqi commandos to play
the amazing Iraqi
parts, and then we would play, like, the U.S. parts. And but it was on some level. I don't understand how to fully describe it in a way that makes sense to people who would,
yeah,
I don't know, don't understand how morbid and weird, like, people in that environment have to be.
Well, that's funny that you bring that up, because that's another benefit is, you know, stress relief. It's a big one, and especially when it pertains to soldiers and sailors, airmen overseas. Mm-hmm. I have had some dealings with two different charities that sent care packages, video game care packages, to stations overseas, you know, either a ship out at sea or either a military hospital where there are people recovering, you know, and that kind of stuff, is stackup.org and Operation Supply Drop. Those are two that, yep, I worked with a little bit. And I'm still in contact with the owner of stackup.org, and I want to do some more stuff with him since I'm, you know, into video games and all, obviously, military background. So those are two. If any of you guys are listening, check those out. They're really cool. They send thousands of dollars worth of donated hardware overseas, which is, and also locally, they do stuff, you know, at like Bethesda and other military hospitals, and they also have these programs where they'll try to generate some money to send like a soldier that's, you know, had some not so great experiences, you know, overseas. If he's back here in the States, they'll send him to like E3 or send him some other video game related event, you know, sort of like a morale kind of boost, which is pretty cool.
And it seems very contrary.
Yeah.
I mean, to very kind hearted and good natured people. Like, if they want to help the troops, it's like, well, get them some video games. And you would think that you would want to get them a game that has nothing to do with that content.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That you want to get them the furthest thing away. Like, this game, you just trample through a meadow, and you just peacefully exist in this game. Or like, they're like, this game sucks. No one would want to play it. Like, they want a game that mimics the world that they just lived out. I don't know. It's strange. But, like, when Call of Duty 4 came out, like, you could fly around as the helicopter gunner.
Yeah,
and it was really funny that, because I'm in a room full, I mean, that's what we did for a living, and we couldn't wait to run back and play the game to virtualize
so what bizarre
we had just done reality. Yeah, it was crazy.
Could that be something like to take the stress out of what you're actually doing by doing it in the game and knowing that nothing bad could happen at that point?
Ooh, that's deep. It could have been.
I don't know.
I don't know, but I mean, we would just make fun of each other. I think that was the most thing. Like, I'm sure that there could be a lot of psychiatrists that could tear this whole idea apart and, you know, dig really deep into the psyche of this whole thing. But I mean, if there was a camera set up on us, we would just be cursing and ripping on each other. And when someone new came up, we're like, all right, we'll play with just shotguns or whatever. And then we would just run around with knives and just like stab everybody and go, you suck at this game, and just berate them for their performance. So I'm sure deep down on some Freud level, there's something there.
Every time I've played Call of Duty with my friends.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because they kill me and then make fun of me for how bad I am. Now, my go-to game growing up was one of two games. Because I played a lot of role-playing games because I liked the, you know, the fantasy aspect and the monsters and swords. And so there was a game for Sega CD called Lunar, which was basically you boy and dragons and magic. And then there was another one called Shining Force, which was like a turn-based game, but same type of thing. You're fighting demons and, you know, monsters. And it was just, I sat down with those games for much longer than I should have been allowed to. That's why I ended up with glasses. I remember playing the one game from Friday afternoon and sleeping like in 4-hour clips up until Sunday night when I had to go to school the next day. And it was just, it was a comfort thing because I got picked on a lot in school, so I didn't really want to go out in those groups. I wanted to stay home where it was safe and warm.
I think, I mean, that could be translated to people with Pokemon Go right now.
Yeah.
Is that they may feel out on the fringe, and this one thing that they were able to hold on to as a kid that was still in the fringe, like, is coming back in full force, where now people that could care less about Pokemon are just excited about some new game. They're making a community, and now...
validation.
Like, yeah, like, they're the front runners because they know what's up already. They have experience with this game, and so it's just building another community in this thing that used to be kind of quiet, and you had to, you know, play in your room, or if you had somebody with another, you know, a Game Boy Color, you could hook together with the cable.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very individualized in a small niche kind of thing that now is blown up into epic proportions with this game. It's nuts.
In a matter of 2 days.
Yeah.
And being a geek is a little bit cooler right now than it was, you know, 20 some years ago when first came out. So, you know, don't have to be chastised the same way as, you know, probably when we were growing up.
My wife still will, don't worry. I told her about Pokemon. She's like, "You're downloading that crap." I'm like, "You don't even know what this is.
Don't judge me."
It's dumb.
That was actually the funny thing, because I was sitting there for a while going, "All right, I'm going to stay away from that game. I'm not going to get it. And me and my wife were out, and she's like, "Oh, I've been thinking about downloading that." And I just looked at her. I was like, "Wait, what? You don't play video games?" She's like, "Yeah, it looks kind of fun." I was like, "Oh, my God. All right, I'm going to go download it." So I'm getting texts all day today, like, "How do I'm trying to throw the ball, but it keeps bouncing off the bouncing around and not getting them." I was like, "No, you got to fling it like an arc and throw it at their heads. You got to peg them in the head." And it's, if you think about Pokemon, it's really messed up. And there's debates all over the internet, but it's basically, "Oh, hey, look, a little animal. Throw something at its head.
Animal
cruelty. Peg it in the head and trap it like Ghostbusters.
And it captures something in a round cage."
Is there a game that your wife really likes?
She I think used to play King's Quest when she was growing up.
Wow.
King's Quest was awesome.
And because she would always, whenever she sees that meme, "All your base belong to us," I think that was from one of the original King Quests, that she always laughs, and I never got the joke until she, like, I think we were dating like 6 months or something. She's like, "Oh, I used to play this game all the time." I was like, "Wait, you read comics and you used to play nerdy video games? Wow, I picked right."
How about you, Sean? Does your wife play anything?
My wife plays like a lot of the mobile games, but it's always bad for her because she gets really obsessive. So she plays Tetris right now, but that's more like for therapeutic reasons. But maybe I could talk about it a different time. She started playing Pokemon Go today, so she'll get obsessive about that. But then it's even better because it's with the kids. So she's outside. Actually, right now she's out walking with the kids right now looking for Pokemon. Nice. So
the family.
Does she know any
Pokies
of their names,
together,
or does she have to call them the orange one with fire in his butt?
The kids are constantly telling her the names, so she'll get the hang of it soon.
Yep. I think I like Josh's name better than the actual name.
Yes.
I'm just gonna name them regular people. If Deacon gets
well,
into
you
this,
can,
I'm just gonna
you
name
can
them
rename
names.
You can rename them too once you catch them. So I think the second I catch that one, his name is going to be Firebutt.
Firebutt.
Call him Brian.
This is new and name. This one is named Earl.
I'm gonna call him Taco Tuesday.
How about you, West? Is Catherine playing the games?
I had.
Or did she play any games?
I had tried many times over our relationship to get her into different games that I thought she would like. She actually grew up playing. She had a Game Boy growing up, and she played Super Mario Land, and she beat it, which is awesome. She loved Paperboy, but then I guess she kind of aged out of a lot of. She didn't get any systems after that, and when we got together, I can't remember if it was Christmas or a birthday. I got a Roller Coaster Tycoon, which she played for a little while. You know, it's a little sim game. Yeah, it's quite fun.
It's a great game for kids, too.
But she dropped that. But the one that comes to mind would be Rock Band. She loves playing the guitar in Rock Band. We have Rock Band, Rock Band 2, like the Beatles one, the Lego Rock Band, and she would just veg out playing the guitar. Strangest thing.
That's because every adult loves to play the air guitar.
Yep.
And that gives you the actual same movements, like just something fool. In the hand.
I like singing, strangely enough. That's my favorite.
That game made all of us look like fools, but it was fun as hell, so none of us cared.
I know how to play the guitar. So it was at this New Year's party, and they're like, oh, you can play this song. I'm like, oh, I know how to play that song. It was a Foo Fighters song. It was Everlong. I'm like, oh, I totally know how to play this song. I'm like, how do you do this with these buttons? So I was trying to play like power chords, I thought, like on this goofy controller. And it was like, and I was like, dude, you suck.
That's
and
awesome.
I was like, no. And then South Park came out with that episode where like Randy, the dad, like knew how to play it, and he's got really excessive.
So great.
Yeah, that's actually super mad.
That's actually funny because I have the opposite of that story. There was we were over at my friend's house and one of his friends played guitar, and he's like, you're gonna be pissed when you watch him do this. And he threw it on the absolute hardest level you could possibly do, and you're just watching his fingers go. He's hitting every last thing, and I'm just like, I'm never playing this game because I can't. I don't think I can move my fingers that fast.
It actually went,
I like
the drums. Yeah. Rock Band had the drums.
Yeah,
I thought
Rock
that were
Band.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I actually went to a Foo Fighters concert, and there's one point where Dave Grohl, there's like a kid, like, you know, real close to the stage. He's like, do you like Rock Band? And he's like, woo! You know, the crowd's going, well, do you guys like playing Foo Fighters? Do you like, he's like talking to the one kid, do you like playing Foo Fighters? Yeah, oh yeah. He's like, put that damn guitar down, play or pick up a real guitar. He's like, I've tried that, and I cannot play it for the life of me. He's like, I can't play my own songs. He's like, try real guitar.
Okay, I don't feel so bad.
It's so awesome.
But Tiffany used to play, or we used to play together. When we first got married, we still had an NES, and we had it in our bedroom. And she would sit at the foot of the bed because the cord only reached so long and play Mario 3. And so, like, if we had it right now, like, she would get down on some Mario 3. She loves that game. I remember I would fall asleep and I'd wake up at random times and it'd be dark with all the different colors flashing on the walls because she's still up at the foot of the bed, not going through the warp zone. She liked to play the long version.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Time for a RetroPie.
Yeah. Is it now, Mr. Swain?
I'm waiting.
Ready for a RetroPie?
Let's do it.
Well,
you got to move first, brah.
Well, that presents its own set of problems.
Yes.
So we're nearing, I guess, an hour. But, that would lead into the, I guess, what we're working on or what we've been doing. And so I'll drop it to the podcast world. But I just put out a video on my YouTube channel to explain all this thing. But by the 1st of October, I have to be out of my house. My landlords, who are really nice, good-intentioned people, they want to sell the house that we rent. So we got to get out. So for all intents and purposes, we're going to be homeless. But we got an idea. So we're going to get a fifth-wheel trailer that we've been researching and get a big old truck. And we're going to move. I work on a Navy base, so we're going to move on base to the trailer park. To the trailer park. Man, that sounds terrible. To the RV camping resort on the lake and save a bunch of money so that we can probably within a year or so not work at where I currently work. I'm not sure if my boss listens to this or not, but if he does, this will be my one-year-ish kind of notice. Yeah, so we'll save up some money and we'll go traveling for a year. So the workshop, well, most of the workshop's probably going to get put into storage. I'm trying to find some clever ways to incorporate my X-Carve and probably a 3D printer somewhere into the little compartments and basements and flipped open hatches or whatever that's in the RV.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, so Wes and I had talked about what we're kind of hinting at is that we were going to have a collaboration build a while ago, back when you kind of first started the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Was that we were going to make a wooden NES that was powered by a Raspberry Pi computer that would run, like, a game emulator that would run every NES, Super NES, like, every video game that you can have. But it was going to look like a regular wooden Nintendo console.
And probably a controller as well, yeah. With wooden games that you put in.
Yeah, I actually made a wooden game. So people that follow stuff on Instagram, that was one of my first X-Carve projects, is I made a wooden NES game, and I got on Photoshop, and I designed a PI Workshop, like, NES game label that looks all 80s, kind of like the fancy neon lines, and there's little categories of NES games. There's action game and knowledge game. So I put, like, little knowledge game, and it looked all official. It was kind of cool, and so I have that on my desk at work and to remind me that I don't want to be there. I want to go home and play in my workshop. But that will eventually come, so I don't know how we're going to do that. It probably will probably be pretty X-carve heavy if I can actually figure out a way to put that thing in there without it getting beat around every time we hit a bump. You may just have to make it for me.
Hey, when you road trip up here, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Done. So what's everybody else been doing?
I am looking forward to a hopefully full 8 to 10 hours tomorrow of X-carve building.
Wow. You got it assembled?
No. Or no, I'm assembling. Still assembling.
Oh, okay.
So hopefully tomorrow I can, because it seems like I took a look at the directions, and it seems like the farther along you get, the shorter each step gets.
Nice.
So yeah. So I'm at the wiring right now. I got to do the wiring, and then it just seems like they get shorter. And I think I got to go over a couple things, because I put the gantry on, and it doesn't meet the ends at the same time. So something's not square somewhere, but a lot of work to do on that still. So I want to try and get that up and running before I do any other projects.
I was crazy meticulous about making sure every little piece was square along the way, because I'd heard a bunch of horror stories about it being wonky or people not putting it together right. Excuse me. So every time I added something or tightened something down, I checked every little piece for square, tape measure, and with an engineer square.
Well, see, that was the weird thing, because it's not like any of these things have not a lot of these things have adjustments. They're all just A meets B, put the screw in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what I gotta look. I mean, it might be something dumb that, because I have been putting it together at night after work when I'm tired, so I very well could have messed something up.
Sean, what are you doing? What are you geeking out about? What are you up to?
I'm still finishing my iPad stand project. Hopefully I'm going to finish it before I leave for Utah this coming Sunday. So, and hopefully I'll have a video out in a week or two to finish that up. But still plugging away on that.
Is that your teacher's conference?
Yeah. It's a coding conference put on by code.org. For 5 days in Utah. Should be quite an interesting time with, you know, all those teachers. You can go for me, because I'm really not that excited. But
how strict is their definition of teacher?
Credentialed by the state.
Which state?
Any state.
I don't have any of those. It doesn't matter what state.
I'll print a copy and put your name on it instead.
Nice.
I got Photoshop.
It'll be interesting. I haven't done coding in, like, real coding in about 10 years, so a lot of it is going to almost be like learning again from scratch. And then when I get back, it's almost time to get ready for the school year again, so summer's going by pretty quick.
Ugh, God, don't. That still bothers me as an adult. You start seeing, like, because I remember being a little kid, and then also all the fall back, like, I loved cartoons, but whenever the new cartoons came on, I was like, oh, man, it means school's going to start soon. And seeing that stuff as an adult, I still get that.
That feeling, right?
That sinking dread of depression in my chest. Like, wow, school's going to start soon. Why am I thinking that way? I'm 30.
Hey, but you teach high school students, so you don't make them go out and buy, like, tissues and all that other, like, stock the classroom kind of stuff, do you? Do you get to make your, like, school list, or?
It all comes out of my own budget, actually, for most of that stuff. School doesn't provide much at all.
Is that why kids have to go get, like, 20 packs of markers or a bunch of things of tissues and hand sanitizer?
Well, we used to have students donate that stuff to class, and they get extra credit, but we actually legally can't do that anymore. Nice. We cannot give extra credit for a monetary item, because it's almost like buying your grade, in a sense. So we've had to eliminate most of that. Whenever the kids say they need tissue, I just tell them to go outside and, you know, put one finger over the nostril, do a farmer style. They don't like that, but that's what I tell them.
Sink in your, rackets are for your kids.
Is there a sink in your classroom?
No.
I used to have sinks in my classroom.
Ooh la la.
So you just tell them to go and then go wash your hands.
Interesting. Hmm.
Yeah, most of the ladies in the class don't really appreciate that humor of mine, so oh well, they're lost.
There were many boogers underneath every one of my chairs in school. God,
yeah, I don't touch the underside of any desk in my classroom.
Get a power washer.
Wes, what about you, bro?
I have been working on a 3D printing project. It's a short and sweet one. I'm trying to get it done, hopefully the video done by this weekend, of me replacing the Honda emblem on the front and back of my element, the silver H. I'm removing that and putting an Autobot icon that I'm 3D printing.
Nice.
So I designed it in Maya. Good.
Are you gonna like metal coat that, or like spray metal?
I've considered leave
it black.
Well, I've been doing some posts on Instagram trying to pull. I was pretty sure before I posted it, and then people were like, "Why are you doing that?" The plan was I was gonna do the vapor smoothing on it to get rid of the print lines, kind of like I did for my T-Rex, to get a nice, you know, shine on it. That almost looks chrome after you do that process by itself. I was either going to do that and then get some metallic, you know, chrome spray paint, you know, just rattle can it. But then I posted on Instagram, and people actually, the majority, end up liking the print lines because they said it looked more robotic and more like something from the actual, you know, Cybertron.
I can kind of see that.
And from a distance, you can't see that. So I've mocked it up. I've got some pictures. I'm going to post on Instagram of me actually. I removed the H's already. I kind of quickly taped it up there just to get a look. So I might leave it black. I might still make it. I might get some gray filament to print the same with the print lines in gray to try to equate it to the silver H. I'm not sure, but
did you see the new filament they're coming out with?
Mm.
It's the same as the Metal Mix stuff, the Metal Mix PLA, but instead of it being like a 40-60 mixture. It's actually like an 80-20 mixture, but 80% metal.
Wow.
So what you do is you take that and throw it through the regular FDM printer, and then you put it in a kiln, and it melts. It burns out all the plastic, melts the metal together, and you have for the most part, solid metal piece. I mean, it's not going to be as strong as,
interesting,
you know, a normal like cast piece, but. You know, I got to get my printer fixed so I can start playing with some of that stuff, man, because it...
What kind of metal has that kind of low, that low of a...
that's a thing... Yeah, right. That's a thing I was wondering, too, because I'm looking at it, like, if you threw iron in a kiln like that, wouldn't it lose its structure? Or does it get just hot enough to kind of join everything together?
I don't know.
Like, it's maybe not the strongest piece, but it's still stronger than plastic, maybe? That's something I got a lot of research to do on that one.
See, because aluminum melts at 1200 degrees, and that's 648 degrees Celsius, so that's definitely not hot enough to do aluminum.
No.
So I don't know.
Some pewter mixture or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Look up on Cody's lab.
There you go.
See him melt some crazy thing to get a little bead of tungsten or something strange.
He did that. He took a huge bag of computer parts and he distilled it down to extract all the gold, and he got like this super microscopic bead of gold out of it. It's so ridiculous. It's like he spent like hours and hours to get like this little medicine drop of gold.
Well, since you mentioned that last week, like, I've been binge watching that.
So good, right?
And because, well, chemistry is the only class I've ever failed, like, in my life. And I sat there and I was like, if my chemistry teacher were, like, a tiny bit like this guy, like, put chemistry into action, it would have made it a whole lot better. And I probably would have cared and not thought it was black magic. It would have been way cooler.
Good stuff.
All right. You guys got anything else about video games? How they affected us? How they're going to affect your kids? How it's sweeping the nation?
I have one recommendation. Yeah? I have one recommendation for anybody listening, though. Especially if you know anybody or have anybody that doesn't quite understand video games or just completely against them, have them watch a documentary called Indie Game the Movie. It's a really well documentary. It's a really well made documentary that talks about it from a standpoint that kind of really explains what it is, what the fascination is, and why our generation feels the way we do, primarily about video games. And I highly recommend that. Yeah, it's something I've watched several times that I've pointed out to a lot of other people, and they love it. That's one recommendation there as far as that goes.
Awesome. I mean, because even from this conversation, like, we've dove into some very deep-seated cerebral kind of associations, like stuff from your childhood, stuff from wartime, stuff that you know, it goes way more into, like, you know, you like beating up hookers with a baseball bat in Grand Theft Auto. But
yeah, we just skimmed the surface here. Yeah.
Yeah, like, this is some psychology thesis-type stuff we're getting into, but fun nonetheless.
Yes, sir.
So I think that's all we got for this week. You can find the show at makinggeeks.com, the revamped website, or the revamped in progress.
In progress. It'll be done soon.
So, again, Sean is the behind-the-scenes master that everything. He edits the show, except for the one I did that was all sloppy. Sean does it all well. He runs the website. He's revamping the website instead of just, you know, working with SoundCloud. All the episodes are embedded. All the episodes have their own description. They have their own show notes, their own links. So if you want to listen to them, you can do straight from the website, and you can get a lot more kind of behind-the-scenes content.
He is the central nervous system of Making Geeks.
No, it's easy to, you know, copy and paste code. So it's not that bad.
It's still farther than I know.
And we highly encourage people to visit the contact page on the Making Geeks website and send us some questions, please.
Mm-hmm.
It helps out the show, gives us some more material to deal with, and we'd love to hear from everybody. You know, questions, suggestions, anything about the show, we'd love
to hear. Twitter and Facebook as well.
Absolutely. And Instagram and everybody else.
Absolutely.
Instagram.
And we'll make our...
And don't forget...
Yeah, we'll make our pitch for Patreon. So head on over to patreon.com/makinggeeks. And if you find this content valuable to you, again, this content is out there for free. But if it means that much to you, you could throw us a couple shekels. It goes a long way because, you know, we do have to host the website. We do have, you know, some basic audio equipment. But if you feel that you are appreciative enough for what we're doing that you want to, like Wes talked about, like a tip jar, you know, you want to throw us a tip over on Patreon, it'd be much appreciated. You can check out a bunch of different rewards that you can get. You know, you throw a tip jar at that girl at Starbucks and she won't wink at you. We'll at least let you hang out here while we do stuff, so you get cool things. So head on over there, check out the gifts and rewards you can get for the monetary donations. It really does go a long way here on the show. We'd like to thank you all for hanging out with us on episode number 6.
Six, woo!
I know, right?
Yep.
This is really fun.
Cool.
And from all of us here at Making Geeks, have a great week. Check us out on Saturday when a new episode will be uploaded.
Have a good week.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Have fun playing with your Pokeballs.
Phrasing.
I wanna be the very best, like no one ever was. To catch them is my real test, to train them is my cause.